105 Drive with Julian Clover.
Cambridge Ahead has today been talking about its progress a year after the business and academia group was established. You may remember CEO Jane Patterson-Todd came in to talk to us about it at this time last year. But what are the aims of Cambridge Ahead? Well, here's Matthew Bullock, former CEO of the Norwich and Peterborough Building Society and Master-elect at St Edmund's College, Cambridge.
I think the thing that we learned from an exercise that was done 15 years ago called Cambridge Futures was that you need to have a presentation of the options on a consistent basis so they actually hold together each option. And you use that as a means of creating a dialogue with the community. We're not politicians. We aren't trying to get into the politician space. But we can draw together the analysis of what is happening, what could happen here, and what the options for growth and the ways in which growth could take place will occur. And then that's for something which we would work with the councils to consult about. What is important is that we do actually have that consultation and that people think through what kind of Cambridge they want. People talk about a vision. We want that vision to be bottom-up and not top-down.
A key concern is the city transport infrastructure. 77% of those interviewed for the survey were dissatisfied with the level of traffic in the city. One interesting fact is that the number of men travelling to work by car is the same that say they get on their bikes. And what can we do about that congestion? Professor Michael Thorne is Vice Chancellor of Anglia Ruskin University.
There is, at the moment, in my view, a prohibitive congestion problem. And then separately, there would be the issue to deal with of the growth would bring consequent additional congestion. And it seems to me that the more expensive housing becomes, and therefore the more certain it is that people will need in the lower paid roles to have to come into the city, the more we will frustrate that movement of individuals. And there is likely to be a point at which the model becomes unsustainable, i.e. we'll all be locked in this fortress of very expensive housing and have to look after ourselves because no one else can penetrate the fortress to be able to make things happen, whether that's, looking after ourselves in hospital or whether it's trying to make a particular area of employment work. And something has to give. If I come up here from our campus in the south, it's a 45-mile journey. First 42 miles on the motorway from Chelmsford take 42 minutes. The remaining 3 miles at 8 o'clock in the morning also take 42 minutes. There's no point in using the park and ride because the park and ride is in the same queue that I'm in. And bicycles isn't the answer because I can't, forgive me at my age, bike 45 miles and 45 miles back. So, things have to be thought through, and I think it is an issue, and it's an issue that will disproportionately affect the lower paid, in my view.
The Quality of Life survey showed a gap between older and younger generations, while those between 16 and 44 having much less of a sense of belonging to their neighbourhood. While the older generation feel Cambridge is the right size, the young say the city is too small. Entrepreneur David Cleveley took part in the recent Be the Change conference.
We had this point even before the survey results came out. I mean, there is a gap, I think, that may be potentially developing between the younger people in Cambridge and the older. I mean, there's always a generation divide, but when I looked around at what happened when I was in my 30s and 40s in Cambridge and the kind of people that then stepped up to the plate and started to put things like Cambridge Network and Cambridge Angels and various other things together, you notice that actually that group has floated up and they're still there. Well, it's going to be no good if we pop our clogs and disappear and then who's coming in to replace it? So there's also an issue, I think, to do with local democracy and the way in which the local authorities function and how we actually take notice of what's going on. So, if you've got younger people using Facebook or Twitter or those kinds of social media in preference to necessarily necessarily looking at the newspapers. You have to think about different ways of engaging with them. So Be the Change Cambridge, which is the idea, is to get people together, generally younger people, to start to discuss some of these issues and feel that they can actually have an influence, they can discuss this stuff, they do have some power. And out of that group, if we're successful, you never know whether you're going to be successful or not, out of that group may emerge some potential leaders in the future.
We know that Cambridge is going to grow in size, but can people continue to feel part of the city? Matthew Bullock again.
Cambridge as a place does bring in a lot of people from outside. One of the reasons perhaps why people don't feel as part of the community is that there are a lot of people coming into Cambridge for the universities, just coming in for jobs. And one of the issues we have to be clear is how do we make this more self-sustaining and engaging all the people who live in Cambridge and not just people who come in here. And so I think this issue about what is it that enables these people to come in, to gel with the local community, not grow separate from them, and create the networks and keep the maintaining the growth, creating the dialogues, that's very special. We have to understand that better. And it isn't something which will just... It can just happen. Individuals will drive it. But as we get to greater scale... Yeah. And let me just talk about the rate of scale that we're talking about. The council in its plans now, so the plan's going to consultation now, is already talking about more than four Saffron Waldens, growing in Cambridge and South Cams in the next 20 years. Yeah? That's quite a lot of growth. And where that will come from, whether that's going to come from outside or whether it's going to be people growing within the region, because there's a very high birth rate in this region, we've got to understand those points and get people to engage with them and make young people realise that they can connect here, that they will be welcomed, and it will work as an organic whole.
Matthew Bullock ending our look at today's Cambridge Ahead press briefing.
Your city, our city. Because we live here too.
Cambridge 105.
Bidwell's fundraising gig Bidstock is coming up on October the 12th. It's being held at the Portland Arms in support of the East Anglian Children's Hospice. Steve Ford, who works in fundraising and events for EACH, came in to tell us a little bit more about the charity. So Steve is here from EACH, the East Anglian Children's Hospice. And I remember when you were in last time, Steve, you were telling us that you gave up your marketing job in order to go and work at the hospice, learn a little bit about the voluntary sector. How are you finding it, and how does it differ from what you were doing before?
There's similarities because in fundraising and events, there's an element of marketing involved. Mm. But with working for EACH, it's quite a humbling experience. Mm. Everybody knows what they're working towards, and that's to help provide and get as much support and funds to keep the three hospices going.
And what was the sector that you were working in before for marketing?
I worked for a large roofing supplies company.
Oh,
based
that's
in
okay.
Ives, yes.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yes, yeah.
Okay, so in the course of working for EACH, you know, have you had the opportunity to see the work firsthand?
I have in the hospice on a couple of occasions. We don't, as fundraisers, go over there too much because obviously there's a lot going on. Mm. But yeah, I have seen it firsthand.
Well, what sort of thing have you been able to see? Because I kind of get the impression that it can be, I don't know, quite distressing. I would have thought for the staff at times.
I think after a while, although they won't show it, it is a little bit distressing, but I think after a while they do get used to it a little bit more. But the good thing is it's a fun place to be. It's not like a hospital, which is very clinical. It's very much like home to the children. And all the staff go out of their way to make it like a real home.
Yes, I guess seeing too many sort of doctors and nurses walking around with clipboards, this is the environment has to be fine. I presume we're talking, you know, pastel coloured walls and the rest.
There is quite an element of that, and we do have quite a lot of people donate murals. They come along and paint for us, make it nice and bright for the children. But the staff, really, I mean, there's every child is given a proper care package, so it suits every particular child.
Tailor-made, if you like, to fit whatever the care requirements might be.
It certainly does, yes. Mm. Yeah.
Well, what have you seen? I don't know if you can give us any examples of what you might have seen firsthand doing your visits to the hospice. It's presumably the one at Milton is the one the nearest for you.
It is, and it's not quite... There's only a few yards away from our head office where we work from in the fundraising team. My only personal experience has really been with a care day shift that I actually did with a teenager and a 2.5-year-old a girl. Yeah.
Guess if you're a teenager, you're already grumpy in the first place. So to have to need the care and to go through any illness or whatever that might lead you into care in the first place, you know, what sort of reactions do we get?
Certainly with some of the teenagers, they can be like normal teenagers. They want to have their lie-ins. But with a lot of them, they're, you know, like I say, they're well looked after. You know, it is made a fun place for them to be. They have lots of things to do. So, you know, they're well looked after. Mm. You know.
And be it fun or be it care, something like the Bidstock Festival taking place at the Portland Arms is presumably going to help raise some much-needed funds in order to take care of the kids there. Well, what sort of projects are being worked on at the moment?
Oh, we've got lots and lots of projects at the moment. Apart from obviously the Bidstock, and I know working with Bidstock, they're also going to have their own beer, which is going to be launched on the 16th of October, and they have a burger as well. So £1 for every burger and pint that's consumed, £1 goes to each, and that's going to be at the brew house in Cambridge.
Okay, that's on King Street.
It is, yes, yeah. So they're involved in that. I mean, we've got people that have done things, everything from swimming from Alcatraz to the mainland in San Francisco, people doing cycle rides. I was at the hospice last week and 30 cyclists from Travis Perkins dropped in. We had to provide them with lunch. They were about 2 hours late. And they got lost.
2 hours late, 2 hours late in arriving or 2 hours late in leaving?
Arriving.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fed them well, charged them up with a few more carbohydrates to get them going.
Yeah, I think some of them jumped in the van in the end.
In terms of the money that needs to be raised, what are we looking at in terms of running costs here? Not cheap, methinks.
Definitely not, no. Because we have so many care staff, and obviously we've got the three buildings as well, all the background staff, we're looking at, for every hospice per day, it's £5,300 at the moment. So as you can imagine, £16,000 for the three hospices is an awful lot to try and raise.
Yeah, no, very much so. Well, look, best of luck with fundraising generally and also with the Bidstock event coming up as well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. That's Steve Ford. He works in fundraising and events for each of the East Anglian Children's Hospice. That event, Bidstock, is on October the 12th, 2014. It's a Sunday. It runs from 2 o'clock in the afternoon through to 10 in the evening. Amongst the bands, you can see Venus Grove, Fourth Labyrinth, Flux 32, Derrico, Lil Ian Goodsman and Adam Crothers. All those appearing at the Bidstock Festival and event. Think that one's probably worth going to.
On 105 FM and online.
The Shadow Sports Minister, Clive Efford, has been down at the Abbey Stadium this afternoon, and Jake Butt was there too for Cambridge 105.
I'm here at the R. Costings Abbey Stadium with Shadow Minister for Sport, Clive Efford, MP. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Now, there's no match today, so what brings you to the Abbey Stadium today?
Well, I've been here to discuss with the directors the future of the club and the concern that they've got about regenerating either this site or the one out at Trumpington, where they would like to move as part of the new development. Now, that's fallen into some difficulties, as I understand it. But it's quite clear that the club is very passionate. It's got itself back into the Football League. It wants to look to the future, and it needs a stadium that's fit for the future of the club. And this ground is in need of a significant amount of investment. Now, at the lower ends of the Football League, money's very tight, and it's very difficult to come across that sort of investment unless you've got land and developers that want to come in and be a partner with you and invest some money. Now, Grosvenor House own this site. They also want to develop the site on the outskirts of the city, and I think there's an opportunity here for the local authority, the club and Grosvenor to get together and say, well, what can we do that's best for Cambridge? You know, obviously the local community are passionate about their local football club. I'm sure this place would be packed out if they got drawn in the cup against Manchester United or someone like that. You know, the community would turn out in its droves. That's the nature of football. And so it is part of the community. It's an important asset, an important amenity. It does fantastic work dealing with thousands of young people through its community trust. So why wouldn't you support Cambridge United Football Club in the work in trying to secure its future? And Grosvenor House, as their landlords, I think should really help them do that.
Do you think there's a need for a community stadium and sporting village in Cambridge?
Well, for Cambridge United, I think that there's something is needed, whether it's here or whether it's at Trumpington. Something needs to be done for the club for it to secure its long-term future. In terms of the wider needs of the sporting village out there, it looks a tremendous development with lots of facilities out there. I'm sure that would be very welcome, and that's a matter for the local community and the local elected representatives to decide, you know, what scale that should be and what should be included in it. And I know that the club would very much like to be a part of that, and that's for local decision makers to decide. But what I would say is, if you come here, you've got a fantastic club here, people working incredibly hard to keep it going. It does a tremendous amount for the local community. So what we want to hear from Grosvenor, who are the landlords, that we're going to help sustain the future of this club.
Cambridge United also, as you referenced, does a lot in the community, such as the Cambridge United Youth and Community Trust. You've said in your Sport for All consultation that you want to set out a longer 10-year strategy. Where do you see clubs like Cambridge United coming into that strategy?
Well, what we've set out is local networks for sport, where local providers, people who are involved in delivering sport, planning sport at local level, would come together to develop a strategy to address local needs, maybe disaffected young people, may even be elderly people that you need to get active, keep them healthy, or any areas of need that you identify. And people who deliver services at a local level, like Cambridge United's Trust, would be an important player in that, because they do a lot of work with a lot of young people. So they would be involved in providing diversion activities for young people who might get involved in antisocial behaviour. They might provide advice about health issues and anti-drugs policies, to prevent kids getting into the habit of taking drugs and things like that. And very important role that they play at local level. So it's very important that they're involved in also making decisions about how sport is developed in that local area, so that they are empowered to, do more of what they're already doing. So that when local authorities or the government, for instance, has got a plan and a strategy for instance, working with young people in those sorts of areas, there's a ready-made plan locally, ready-made delivery organisations like Cambridge United at the grassroots in local communities, ready to work as a partner with, and we get more efficient use of our resources. We can lift some of the burden of the bureaucracy of bidding and having to report back and tick boxes to different departments of government or different organisations by having these local plans in place and the structure in place to deliver more efficiently at local level. But I've been up and down the country consulting on this, and that's been very popular with people at the grassroots of sport.
Is there a pending crisis for grassroots level football?
Well, I think we need to get more investment in grassroots facilities from the Premier League. When the Premier League was first set up, it agreed that it would put 5% of its domestic TV rights into the grassroots of sport. Now, that's not happening. And I would insist that they live up to that promise and that that money is put in. Because if we can improve facilities at clubs like this, for instance, if they were, we were to invest in an all-weather pitch here, the local community could benefit from using that as much as the club would benefit enormously financially from it as well. So if we can get that sort of investment going in at grassroots, we can improve the financial viability of a lot of clubs at the lower end of football that are currently struggling from day to day to survive financially.
We have organisations such as Save the Grassroots who are calling for 7.5% levy from TV funds going to grassroots. But as you say, at the moment it's difficult to get Premier League sides to commit to that 5% that they're supposed to be giving. So how do we enforce that money coming from the top level? Is there any way that government can force that distribution of funds of that, that there is so much of at the top level of football?
Well, but we need to sit down and be very forceful with the Premier League about how they are currently funding grassroots sport. They did sign up for 5%. I'd love to see 7.5%, believe me. But if we got them to 5%, that would be £55 million a year going into the grassroots. That's a phenomenal amount of money. It's a huge increase on what's currently happening, and it could make a real significant difference, not just for football, because the facilities that they invest in at grassroots level within the community could be used for many different sports. So a lot of sports can benefit on the back of the real big money spinner, which is football. And I think we've just got to hold their toes to the fire and say to them, look, up with this, we're not going to put, you're not just going to put all this money into fat salaries for overpaid Premier League footballers. We have a desperate need for investment at the grassroots of sport in this country, and you should be playing your part. And the way they negotiate their TV rights may not be in place forever, and the Premier League ought to be, remember that.
And we're still having failures at lower level with financial problems. Are you in favour of fan ownership and possibly the German model that's in place of 51% fan stakeholdership, if that's the word?
Yeah, so it's 50+1% in the Bundesliga. And they took a drastic measure. And they came together because, you know, historically it was because their national side wasn't doing well, and they had a fundamental grassroots, you know, root and branch look at what was happening in football. And they decided that they had to restructure at the top level of their game, and they came up with 50+1%, which is going to be reviewed in the future, and it seems to have worked. They do not pay the astronomical sums that we pay for players. They do not charge the earth for fans to go to their grounds, yet they are now the world champions. And a year ago at Wembley, it was two German sides that contested the final of the Champions League. So they're very, very successful. So we would want to look very much at what's going on in Germany, whether we could replicate it here. But the two things I would really say, what we've got to do is have a greater say for fans in the way their clubs are run, and I'm quite clear about that. The fans want that, and I think that's the best for the game. If they're better informed about discussions about prices of tickets and arrangements for away fans and things like that, by being involved in discussions at you know, board level and being able to communicate with the directors the genuine grievances of fans, then I think we should make that facility available. Better representation of fans in football clubs is something that they need, where the directors have got to listen to them. Where we can do it, where fans might be able to take ownership of their clubs, then, you know, I would want to provide all the support I can. But at the end of the day, you're dealing with business. And there's a limited amount government can do, but I would want to do all we can to make it easier for fans to take a stake in their club.
And just finally, Labour government next year, is that better sport for Cambridge?
Oh, I think better sport at grassroots level. Our 10-year plan, and the reason it's a 10-year plan, is that we have a real problem in this country. We have people who absolutely adore sport, but people who aren't active enough. And people talk about an obesity problem. We have an inactivity problem. Never mind how much people weigh and all the rest of it. It's really about inactivity. And that's about investing at grassroots level of sport and physical recreational activity. And that's important. We can't ignore that, because the growing costs of not addressing that issue for the whole country is going to be billions and billions of pounds. And so that's why we've set out this 10-year plan, to bring everyone who's involved together to have a clear sense of direction of where we want to go and what we want to achieve, so we can all work together towards that goal.
Clive Efford, thanks very much.
Shadow Sports Minister Clive Efford speaking to Jake Little earlier on this afternoon at the R. Costings Abbey Stadium.